All right, we're here for our first episode of The Road Comics Guide in Los Angeles, technically, but we're pretty close to North Hollywood, if I understand. I'm here with Quincy Weekly.
That's right.
How are you doing today, sir?
Pretty good. Or pretty bad, depending on how you look at it.
Fair enough. So what made you want to get into comedy?
It's kind of weird. I never thought about comedy as a career.
Yeah.
I always enjoyed comedy. I remember... My friend introduced me.
Did you sign up?
Yeah, I did. There's like two names on there right now. Sorry, guys. Peter Prinz just walked up in the middle of us recording. That's who was talking.
He runs. What's up? How's it going? Are you recording your podcast?
Yes, I am. What's your name again, Peter?
Peter Prinz. We're doing the repeat show tonight, 11 o'clock to 2.
At the world famous Next Stage Theater off of La Brea.
AKA the Actors Studios Theater.
Okay.
Nice. They're rebranding.
Do you smoke marijuanas?
No, and I do, but yeah, I don't want to hit the roach. It's okay.
I know.
They don't want to hit the roach? Oh, get out of here.
I'm not ready for that yet.
It's legal here, people. Yet. We're good.
But yeah, it's called the Actors Studio Theater at Black Box Studios.
Yeah. On the corner of Sunset and La Brea.
Sunset and La Brea, yeah.
Well, in between, yeah. I guess corner of Sunset and La Brea. Because we're almost on the corner. Yeah.
So the same parking structure as Matzi Malone's, which is a famous Persian ice cream restaurant.
And the Woods.
The Woods.
Bar. Pretty cool little dive bar down there.
Yeah, I need to check it out still.
What, are we getting paid to advertise for this fucking place?
Possibly.
That's what we're doing.
For all zero listeners. Peter is leaving the building.
Yeah, he's left the building.
All right.
So what got me into comedy? I never thought about doing comedy never thought about being a comedian as a career. I remember when I was younger, my friend showed me Eddie Griffin special. I don't remember the name of it. He's wearing yellow. He has a big yellow hat.
That was the high-cut thing, right?
I think so. I remember really enjoying that. And then, of course, I had a friend of mine, Brian. I won't say his last name. But his mother and father, they were one of those people who had the dual VCRs. So whenever he'd rent a movie, they would dub it so they'd have a copy of it themselves.
Nice.
And he had, like, all the video games for Nintendo. Anyway, he had a copy of Eddie Murphy Raw. And I remember we used to watch it all the time, and I would have to call my mom. His parents would make me call my mom to get permission to watch it. And I always liked it. I loved it. Then I saw Delirious. I liked that. Fast forward, later, I lived in Fresno for like 3 years. It was one of the times I had cable for an extended period of time.
Yeah.
And so I watched, like, basically for a year, I watched, like, all the Comedy Central Presents stand-up specials.
Okay.
Liked a lot, didn't like some.
Yeah.
Then I moved here. For production, actually. And because I'd run sound for live TV shows, I got a job at a comedy club as a sound guy.
Yeah. Nice.
Yeah, so then that's how it began. Then I was like, oh, dude, I love comedy, so I could watch comedy and get paid, you know, for a job.
Yeah.
So it was like a perfect fit. And then, of course, I got the bug after like 8 months, and a lady, Bobby Oliver, was teaching classes at Pasadena City College. That's where the Ice House is in Pasadena, California.
Okay.
She moved the classes from Pasadena City College to the small room at the Ice House.
Okay.
And then I took that class. She gave me a discount for setting up the equipment, you know, like the soundboard and all that stuff.
All right.
And then I don't want to say the rest is history because there's a lot in between that, but that's how I got started in comedy.
Fair enough. How long have you been doing it for?
I've been on the scene for like 12 years.
Damn.
But... it's not a real 12.
Like breaks in between? Or
yeah, the most recent one was just over a year ago. I was basically gone from comedy for like 2.5 years.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, I can't really say that I was ever fully in it. There were periods of time where I, you know, would work hard at it, and then other periods of time where it was really just a hobby.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right, so far, what is your least proud moment in comedy or, like, your worst bomb? Like, something that's kind of stuck with you?
My worst bomb, actually, I can't even say it stuck with me just because I don't think about it that often.
Okay.
But I just randomly recently I was thinking about it because I was talking with a couple of friends. And I was really early in, I was doing the show at the Ice House, and the stage is called The Annex, and they call it Stage 2. but it's a smaller room, not the main room. And I was doing terribly. I started sweating profusely, and I looked over to my friend, another comic who was off stage, and I essentially asked him for help from the stage. Like, Dan, dude, you gotta help me. And being true to comic form, he just looked at me, smiled, and left the room.
Shut.
So, yeah, that was probably my worst experience on stage.
All right. What was your best experience or your proudest moment so far?
What was my proudest moment so far? I remember one of the proudest moments is also early on. It's when I went on after George Lopez.
Holy fuck, really?
Yeah, and this is like when he was like really hot, you know, show was on the air, all that stuff special. So I went on at the Ice House where he used to be a house MC, and that's a kind of a Latino club. Most of the audience members are Latino.
Okay.
So it's like going on after their god in a way.
Yeah.
He was like the god of Latino comedy at the time.
He was the first special I ever saw.
Yeah, he's very funny. It's so funny, that special. Anyway, I went on after him. And the same friend who was there, my friend Dan Smith, I was like, hey, when I was bombing, I was like, hey, Dan, and he walked out, he gave me a joke to use, which was, you know, this is after the story that that George had given his kidney, or got the kidney from his wife.
Uh-huh.
And he told me to say, I would have given him a kidney if I knew he needed one, because I have like three. Which is just, you know, a funny fat joke, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. And it did really well. And then the rest of the set went pretty well, actually.
Nice. Yeah. All right. How would you describe the scene here? Like, would you say it's welcoming, clicky, rougher? Especially compared to some of the other scenes that you've seen.
My experience is so limited as far as scenes is concerned. So LA is the only scene I know. So,
okay.
Versus compared to other scenes, I don't know really. I don't know what it's like.
Mm-hmm.
But I'll tell you, there are very funny comics here, and this place makes you work hard.
Yeah.
From what I understand, the two places of New York and Los Angeles, New York is more of a writing based, and LA is more performance based than humor. So.
You guys just seem to like impressions out here, I've noticed.
Yeah, so, like, that's really huge. But that kind of stuff, like, you're doing characters, you get cast in something, you're on TV. You know, your life is just that much easier.
Yeah.
Right, you book a commercial, you can do comedy fully, you know, and have another form of income without having to have a day job.
Fair enough.
Yeah. So that's a big part of it. You know, book commercials, book a show. And once you do that, you can charge a lot for your tickets. It's easier for you to fill the room based upon your name. You can just do your shows and get so much better, so much faster.
Nice. What would you, like, what advice would you give to new comics coming to the scene?
All the people who I appreciate as comics, who I like, and, you know, who I make sure that I watch, all of them write a lot.
Okay.
So performance is fine. But there's got the heart has to be the written material, and all of them write every day, and also a lot of them ask a lot. You know, they ask for spots, they ask for time. They kind of network well, but the writing is the other thing. Because if you just start going to places and killing, people will approach you.
Okay, what would you say would be things to like that would piss off hosts of open mics or like people like when comics approach them like for a booked thing like. What advice would you tell them, like, not to say or, like...
So now I'm sort of confused by the question. So, like...
Sorry.
So you're asking if I approach the comic and ask them to be on the show, what I think that person should say to me? Is that what you're saying?
No, like, some people, like, come out here and, like, they right away want to get on a book show without, like, having been seen by anybody. I notice some people are a little pushy about it. And there's some bookers who are like, this really pisses me off, this annoys the shit out of me. Like, what are some of the things that you've seen, like, people do that, like, made the bookers kind of just go, fuck you?
Well, I see a lot of people who try to get on, like, really good shows too early. And so they end up pushing to get on. They get on the show, and they bomb, basically, don't perform well.
Okay.
And that becomes like a lasting impression.
Yeah.
You know.
So
that's
what's too early here?
I mean, it really isn't like a time period. It's really about you, you know.
Yeah.
But there's another thing. It's like, yeah, believe in yourself. And at the same time, I see a lot of people who are pushy. You know, 1 or 2 years, you see them doing a lot more things than the average comic.
Okay. Might be,
because they're just asking, you know, that yeah. much more.
Okay. Yeah. Fair enough. In general, what advice would you give to new comics? Like, somebody first their open mic, maybe they bomb, they come up to you, ask you some questions. What would you tell them?
I would tell them to not waste time at an open mic and realize that they're necessary for, like, most people. You know, like, an overwhelming majority of comics need to go to open mics.
Yeah.
You know, and they need to be there for a little while.
Yeah.
You know, it becomes a weird thing where you watch people, you know, I've seen people go from open mic to having their own TV show, you know.
Yeah.
Since I've been out here. And same, it's like you kind of become king of the mics. Then you start doing more shows, become king of those shows. And then you just keep, you know, keep evolving. But that's the real thing to do, like I said, is you keep writing and don't waste your time when you go to a mic. Like the, and I'm guilty of this too. It's super annoying. When you've been waiting for 2 hours to get on stage,
yeah.
and you go, what do you guys want to talk about? It's like, what were you doing with those 2 hours?
Yeah.
If you don't have something that you can talk about for 3 to 5 minutes, you know, that's a problem.
Yeah.
I think. That's annoying too, because as a, you know, I don't watch all the comics when I'm at a mic. I don't know if anyone can do that, because you go to multiple mics a day,
yeah.
you can't just sit there and watch, but I go in and I watch people, and I always appreciate it when they, you know, they have shit prepared and they do, they're working on something. Even if they're bombing,
yeah.
it's like, okay, they're working on something, they wrote out something, they know that it doesn't work, they can tweak it now, or, you know, they can do this, or do that. And also, don't think of bombing at a mic, like, that's...
Yeah.
Yeah, like, if you don't do well at a mic, it's not like you didn't have a good show.
Yeah, you went out there and you at least went out to bat.
Yeah, it's such a specialized audience.
Somebody told me here, like, if you get a few chuckles from comics, that's an equivalent of a standing ovation. Like, would you agree with that statement?
That's the exaggeration, the exaggerated version of it. But yeah, if you can get 5 tired comics out of, like, 9 to laugh at, like, 1:30 in the morning, you know, you have something.
Okay.
That joke has some legs. Grab some foundation.
Alright, so what are your comedy goals? Like, what do you want to get out of this?
What I really want to get out of this is I just want to make a living off being a comedian.
Okay.
Yeah, so a comfortable living. You know, I don't want to be scraping by living, you know, show to show necessarily, but you know,
yeah.
I want to make a comfortable living enough to where I can, like, raise a small family and do that until I can't anymore.
Yeah.
That's, and the travel, really, that's one of the biggest perks for me. I know the actual traveling itself sucks, but, you know, destinations are things I'm looking forward to.
Okay. Is there anything you think the LA scene is lacking? Is there anything you wish you could see more of, or, like, that could be done better?
Well, what LA scene is lacking, it's really not, I don't know if that's the right way to say it, in my opinion.
Yeah.
For instance, San Diego, which is only 2 hours away,
yeah.
their scene is amazing. Like, mm-hmm. they get real people in open mics. You know, the shows are populated. And there's not that in L.A. because it's a saturation of entertainment.
Yeah.
You know, you have everything here. You know, acting, comedy, singing, dancing. I mean, everything. You know, so there's... Everyone's being pulled in so many directions that it's hard for you to get an audience. That I would like to see L.A. have more audience, because I think the comics would get even better, even faster.
Okay.
Like, if you could somehow take San Diego audience and mix it with L.A. comics, it would be...
You guys could, like, chip in for a bus and, like, offer free shuttles to
L.A. shows.
Yeah,
I mean, that's what I'm currently doing as part of, like, you know, me really going out. So I'm going to San Diego as often as possible.
Okay.
And doing shows there.
Nice. Yeah. Alright, cool. Do you have any shows coming up that you want to plug, or?
Yeah, I'll be in San Diego next week.
San Diego.
Yeah, I'll be at the Madhouse the 17th and 18th. And then at the Ice House on the 30th.
Okay.
And then maybe the Bay Area, Oakland, San Francisco, in between them.
All right. Do you have an Instagram or a Twitter that people can follow you at, or
at
Facebook?
At Quincy Weekly. Weekly is spelled W-E-E-K-L-E-Y, and there's no E in Quincy. Just Q-U-I-N-C-Y. My mouth is kind of dry.
Yeah, mine too. We smoke pot. It smells awesome.
Yeah. Let me ask you a question. How is everything going for you? Like, is the trip turning out the way you thought it would? Better, worse, the same?
A little bit better. Like, every time it's my first couple days in the city, it seems to be the hardest because I'm adjusting. But, like, now I'm getting used to the transitions. But I'm hitting a lot of mics. I'm meeting a lot of great comics. They're pretty excited about the website I have, the blog, where you can go and, like, find lists of open mics in each major city that I visit. So I'll write the instructions on how to get there. The link will be there, and you can click on it, and you'll have all the lists of, like, the Phoenix comedy scene.
Oh, nice.
I need to add the Comedy Bureau and a few other things for L.A. I've been kind of slacking the last couple days.
That happens. So what's the best thing you've done since this trip began?
The best thing I've done since the trip began?
Yeah.
Well, when I was in L.A.,
the best thing that's happened to you, anything like that, you know?
A lot of good things have happened to me, actually. Like, it's a weird mix. It's like a lot of weird, shitty things happen, but, like, a lot more good things happen, and people are a lot kinder than I'd expect them to be. Like, I haven't had to spend too many nights sleeping on the streets or being bothered by anyone. Yeah, most comics will let you bum cigarettes, but if I make money doing tarot card readings, I have cigarettes and I share them back. But it was cool when I was in Las Vegas. I won 3 different open mic best set contests. So I got a total of $100 while I was there.
Oh, nice. Yeah. Comedy. It's the greatest, right?
Yeah, it was cool. And it was, you'd get more laughs in Vegas, but it's kind of the same mentality here. Like, it's comics, so they're not going to laugh at your jokes or laugh that hard at your jokes.
Were you just in Vegas?
Yeah, I was there.
Was it like 110 degrees out there or something? Fucking brutal.
Yeah. I was, I started my trip from Phoenix, and it was like 120 when I was leaving there, I think. And then I was in Flagstaff, my hometown, for a couple weeks. I got to headline a show to make money for my trip. And then I got a Greyhound ticket, so I didn't have to hitchhike from Flag to Vegas.
You've been going away from the heat.
Yeah, for the most part.
When you began at 120 degrees. Here it's not so hot there compared to 120.
See, everybody told me when I went to Vegas that I was stupid. It's like, you came here at the worst time. It's like, I'm from Phoenix,
like,
bitch. It's like, it's 10 degrees hotter.
But if you look at the timeline of our weather pattern and her arrival, she literally brought the heat with her.
You
brought the heat with
you. She brought the heat.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, that's because my stuff is
fire. Yeah, she brought the heat. Yeah. Boom.
So bullshit.
So what's the worst thing that's happened to you since this?
Like, there's, like, people who are kind of, like, weird. Like, I guess in Vegas, like, 3 different men, because they see me walking with my rolling backpack and my bags, they'll come up to me and say shit like, hey, it's like, I want to help you out if you help me out. Suck my dick and you can stay in my hotel room.
Oh.
And, like, 3 different guys did that in the same day.
Wow.
And, like, I kind of lost my faith in humanity for a little bit there. And I'm like, this is really fucked up. And then,
that could be really shitty.
In Vegas, men are trying to exploit homeless women.
It hasn't happened here.
It happens here, too.
Yeah, that's what I figured. I don't think it's local to Vegas or, you know.
Not Vegas specifically.
Yeah,
it's a mix. Yeah. But then today I saw a homeless guy in a wheelchair pull a knife on a guy, another homeless guy who wasn't in a wheelchair, and I'm just like, what the fuck happened? I had my headphones in, so I missed the first part of the argument.
I think, honestly, we shouldn't say homeless because there's many different levels. There's just people that are down and out, and then people that are fucking insane on the street, living and sleeping in their own feces. Like, when I walked up here, there's a guy, you see where the sign is right there?
Yeah.
On the other side of that sign and that little metal fence is a guy laying there, spread eagle like this, with an empty liquor bottle right in his crotch, like laying there, like it's his extension of his dick. Looks like he's dead, just laying there dead. And I walked past him. When this Australian family walked by and I turned and looked back, I'm like, God, everywhere there's just people laying dead. in Los Angeles, and they're like, oh my god, they're like so shocked. Because it looks like he's dead. There's people laying there just look like they're dead because they're so fucked up or crazy. Before when I came here and took the bus, I got off on the bus across from the little taco place over there, Sunset and La Brea. When I got off, as soon as I got off the bus, there's a bus stop right there, and in the little cubby of the bus stop, some guy laying there like this, twitching, like, rah, 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 rah. It's these moments you see, they're almost like out of nightmares, out of bad Orwellian fucking crazy nightmares, which is entirely different than somebody that just doesn't have a place to sleep at a moment.
Okay.
It's just like nutballs, like crazy, fucked up, crazy people, and then just, so it's like, but they just blanket, everybody's homeless.
Okay.
You don't have, but you know what? The only thing stopping most actors and entertainers from being homeless in Los Angeles is rent control. Because they came here 15 or so years ago and they logged in a cheap apartment.
Mm-hmm.
But if they were forced out, they wouldn't be able to live here.
Yeah.
And you know how they stay here? You know what they do?
Mm.
They illegally sublet their bedrooms and their living rooms to make ends meet because they can't make the rent. Even when it's rent control. Even when the whole rent is maybe $900.
Mm-hmm.
When I first came here, I rented a room from this lady for $750. Her whole rent was $930. So I basically paid all her rent.
Yeah.
So that's how people survive here.
Okay.
So otherwise they wouldn't, they would all be homeless.
Yeah.
They would all be homeless. So, and then the rents, like now it's like about $1,600 to get a cheap studio apartment in Hollywood. I had a studio apartment a few years ago, it was $1,400.
That's
cheap. Mm-hmm. That's an old building from the 1950s with no central air, no heater that worked. Asbestos in the walls.
That's a great thing about
and
the Valley.
And they consider that a luxury.
Like in North Hollywood, you get in North Hollywood, you get in the Valley, you get more bang for your buck. So more places that central air and heating, parking is better, rent is generally cheaper. It's just hotter, and it's not in LA. So it's about 7 degrees warmer in the Valley. Yeah, it's
the same people.
But if you live like where I live in North Hollywood. Mm-hmm. I'm like, this place, literally coming here, it's like 15 minutes driveway to drive
rent
from where I live.
So there's squeezing
with no
jobs.
It's
like,
but it's close.
We're not going to pay you much for your job.
Kind of went off on a tangent there. We're all almost off.
We did. Yeah. It adds getting an idea of each person in the scene. And I want people's opinions, so.
It's impossible for most people coming in here cold, on your own, getting your own place, unless you're well off, really well off, you can't. You just simply can't. Most people start, like when I first came, the first place I had, I just rented a couch off of other comics in a comics house. It was like a 2-bedroom apartment with like 6 people and 3 dogs.
Okay.
And that was still $100 a week.
Damn.
I could barely get any sleep because the guy that I rented from had this Russian stripper girlfriend that would come home at 5 o'clock in the morning. She'd be in the kitchen just blasting this Russian disco music. And you couldn't sleep in the living room because the living room's like basically connected to the kitchen. So you're up. So you're out all night doing comedy to like 3. And you got 2 hours sleep and boom, you're up.
Okay.
Yeah.
Fair enough.
She wouldn't go to sleep at all. And she smoked heroin off of tinfoils. And there was like a stack of tinfoils by the toilet.
Mm-hmm.
And the dogs would pee on everything. So you had to put chairs on the couches that you slept on. Because otherwise you'd come home and the couch would be soaked in dog piss. Pretty shitty.
Yeah.
Hollywood.
Alright.
And that was the first place I had. I had to fight off dogs peeing on the fucking couch.
Alright. So how long have you been doing comedy?
Coming on 14 years.
Nice. What made you get into it?
I was an extra in the remake of The Longest Yard
It was the Adam Sandler movie.
Yeah.
They shot it out here, like El Camino College or whatever. And there was a warm-up comic. There was like 5,000 people in the stands for the show, for the movie.
Mm-hmm.
And the warm-up comic was keeping everybody busy. And the warm-up comic would bring people down from the audience to do like little games and shit like that to win prizes.
Yeah.
And do whatever your thing was. So I came down there and I imitated the radio DJ that was there, and it was spot on. I got everybody to laugh, and then this warm-up comic invited me to go to the shows, and from there, because comedians all need money, so he convinced me that I should take classes with him.
Mm-hmm.
So I started taking classes with him here in Los Angeles, actually in the Valley of Oak Park.
Okay.
So that's how I got started, because another comedian who needed students got me as a student.
Okay.
So that's how it began. So I started in LA, which is the hardest place to start. You don't want to start.
Okay.
I would tell people also, you don't need a comedy class, and this is from a person who took a comedy class.
Yeah.
But it tells you stuff that you'll learn after you go to a few open mics, you know. Don't run the lights.
Yeah.
You know, if you go to a show, be early. Don't talk shit about the venue.
Mm-hmm.
Stuff that you're going to learn.
Yeah.
Other than that, all they're really doing, it's just a really, 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 really supportive open mic.
Okay.
You know. That's all it is.
But the benefit, like anything, is networking. In my case, the guy that got me into it, his name's Dante, and he runs the LA's Funniest, which is now, it's a different name, but it's LA's Funniest Comic. He's run that for a long time, and he's Ron Jeremy's manager. Yeah. He was a 15-year veteran of the Comedy Store when I met him, so I got to come up and learn from all these Comedy Store guys.
Yeah.
I started as a Comedy Store guy when I began.
Okay.
With all these old-timer Comedy Store guys that, you know, were, and they're all hanging out. So I got to hang out with them and learn from them. And that was cool. And if I hadn't paid Dante $50 per class, I wouldn't be part of that. So it wasn't so much that you can't teach someone to be funny, but by paying a few bucks, just like paying $5 to be at a mic, you gain access to people that you wouldn't gain access to. So it was cheap for me. It wasn't a big class.
Yeah. No, I mean, I mean,
in
my class, I think, ended up, it was like $20 a class.
I took a big,
or something.
2 years in, I took a bigger class at the, actually, it was official improv comedy class at Irvine Improv, and that was taught by Gary Cannon and Steve Mazan. I don't know if you know these guys. Gary Cannon is the warm-up comedian for Conan O'Brien.
Okay.
So he's one of my instructors. So I've learned from some capable comedians. I got some history. You get to know people, because in the end, it's who you know that, you know. But even when you know people, even though I know Gary, it's not like, hey, here's a spot on Conan for you. It's more like, at least I can ask him how to submit because I have a relationship with him.
Okay.
As opposed to having no relationship with anybody. So that's what I've built up over 14 years, is I have relationships where people really don't do anything for me, but they like me.
Okay. What other advice would you give to comics coming to the scene for the first time?
Don't start in Los Angeles, number one. Number two,
I disagree with that.
If you do start in L.A., don't go to the major comedy clubs for 2 years. Don't even show your face. Build an act. A lot of people come here, they just want to be famous, they don't have an act, and they want to be in front of people that are going to make them famous, and they don't bother to think that they don't have an act. They're just like, look at me, I just came in town, I'm funny, I think, come on. And then if you're horrible, first impressions are lasting impressions, so if you're horrible and they don't like you, they're going to remember that you suck, and it's harder to get somebody to like you when they've decided they don't like you than it is to be somebody that's ready and prepared. I'm not saying that comedians will do this. Most won't. Some did. Nick Thune, that was what Nick Thune did. Do you know Nick Thune? Yeah. He did that. It was his same philosophy. He said, came here for 2 years, he didn't hit any of the big clubs, just focused on building an act that was going to work. And then he started to find opportunities.
Yeah, I mean,
but it's hard because you want we want it now. We want it all now.
Well, see, because I find it, I see what he's saying. A lot of people say they don't go to the venue. I disagree with the.
Start the mic now, guys.
Okay, I disagree with not starting in L.A. It's just like, why wouldn't you want to start in one of the better places? You want to learn a bunch of bad habits, and then come here feeling like you're dope, and then showing that you've been wasting the last 3 or 5 years, you know? And that doesn't mean you can't get good somewhere else. You know, people are going to be funny if you're funny. But this is a great place to learn. If you're funny, you get funnier kind of faster, and you get exposure. But, and also, the mic thing, I understand what he says. Like, yeah. First impressions are definitely lasting impressions. But the thing is, like, everyone you see here at this mic, you're going to see at the improv mic, you're going to see at the fucking Laugh Factory mic, at the Comedy Store mic. So it's literally the same group of people moving to every mic. So it's not like there's an elite class of open micer that's going to the clubs. Everyone's going.
Okay.
You know what I mean? So I get the first impression, but also there's an impression of like, oh, this person's been working on their craft.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Which means an awful lot. You know, so if I see you right now and I don't think you're that funny and I see you a year from now and you're getting a lot of laughs, I'm like, oh, she's been working.
Yeah.
You know, like that. So there's that sort of thing that goes on. And I'm not discrediting what he's saying. It's just that's my perspective. It's like everyone's, all the comics you see at mics are going to all the same mics. Any mic that's available. So it's no real difference.
Okay. I do like that moment, like, watching a comic who you thought wasn't very good, and then, like, after a year, they're just kind of like, dude, where the fuck did that come from?
Yeah, yeah.
Like, I always, like, feel that little surge of pride.
Yeah, right?
It's like, oh, damn, look, you learned how to do it.
Yeah, I mean, because, again, you've been working on your craft. You know, you've been writing and performing. Yeah. And that's it. Write and get on stage as often as you can.
Yeah.
All the people that I've seen in... I have no career, so I'm not saying this because, like, I'm successful. That's not the case. But all the people I've seen become successful, you're not basically seeing someone come from starting out, you know, to, like, real success.
Okay.
That's what they do.
Fair enough. All right. Do you have any parting words for my imaginary listeners?
Yeah, don't take a comedy class seriously. I know what he's saying as well. I'm not trying to discredit everything he's saying, but... Those relationships didn't work out because they were fake. They were based upon him being a student and paying, which is what a lot of comics will do. Like, you get here, you've been here like 7, 8 years, rent is expensive, you don't want a job, they start teaching comedy classes, right? Or they start producing premium shows to make ends meet. And so you become part of that. So that's what and this is, again, coming from a person who took a comedy class. None of those people I see at all. Even a year after the class, I didn't see any of them ever at mics or anything. So, you go to a mic, you're going to see some of the same people over the years. A lot of people dropping out, a lot of people coming in, but you'll see some regular people.
Alright, so this has been the Road Comics Guide. I'm your host, Celia Contreras. Check us out at roadcomicsguide.blogspot.com to check out our blog and find out the list of the top comedians in each state, among various other things. And, yeah, y'all have a good night.
Good night.